Good morning. Welcome to Back Chat. Your guest presenter this morning is Mike Rouse, and I'm Danny Gittings. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Danny.
In our main topic today, we're going to be looking at the flood of mainlanders eager to work in Hong Kong, while the number of foreign expatriates coming to work here remains much more sluggish. Mainlanders account for more than 90% of the successful applicants under the various schemes launched by the government to attract outside talent. By contrast, the number of arrivals from many other countries such as the US, UK and Canada remains far below pre-pandemic levels. From high rents to regional competition and then the opportunities in the neighbouring Greater Bay Area cities, Hong Kong is in a race to attract foreigners. So how important are foreign talents to retaining Hong Kong's international image? Do we need more targeted immigration policies? And what can the private sector do to help? You can leave a message on our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. Email us at backchat@rthk.hk or call us, the number there, 233-88266. After 9:40, we're going to be hearing about a Hong Kong U initiative to offer free dental care to the underprivileged. And then at 9:55, we're going to be wrapping up the program by hearing from Jamie Clark on the latest updates on the Asian Games. But back to our main topic on mainlanders and foreigners, foreign expatriates coming to work in Hong Kong. Our guests in our main segment this morning, we have Lam Chung Sing, who is a lawmaker, the Federation of Hong Kong and Kowloon Labour Unions. In our Queensway studio, we have Inaki Amate, who's the chair of the European Chamber of Commerce. And on the line, we have Stephen Barnes. Stephen Barnes is the co-founder of immigration consultancy Hong Kong Visa Centre and the author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook.
Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, morning.
What's the market telling us? What's happening as far as you see?
Well, you know, we can roll out the red carpet and we can make it easy for foreign national talent to secure immigration status to come and contribute to our fine city. But getting them on aircraft and procuring job offers and getting ensconced, they're two separate projects, right?
Right.
So I think in terms of the government having been able to attract applicants for the status and the top talent pass, at least, they've done a great job. Whether or not all of that transpires into firm action on the ground, obviously, we wait to see.
Are you seeing it? How much interest are you seeing, I should say?
Well, I'm seeing interest from the top talent pass, particularly as an easy way in to Hong Kong for those people who are minded to come anyway, to be frank.
Right.
And that's a function, actually, of the marketing job that the government have done in terms of taking the message to the world. Because if you try and sort of compete against the government on the internet these days for, you know, the message that Hong Kong's a great place to come, the government are going to beat your hands down. They're spending a lot of money on Google advertising and the like to try and get folks to come.
Right. Where is the interest? Where is the interest coming from where there is interest?
Well, those who are minded to come anyway, all the usual suspects, those that have got intentions for business in Hong Kong, that happen to have graduated from a top 100 university in the world or have made $2.5 million Hong Kong dollars in salary income in the last 12 months.
So those are coming with
job offers that they had anyway. Yeah, go on.
Sorry. Those are the two criteria, aren't they, for the top talent pass scheme? You've either got to be earning $2.5 million Hong Kong dollars a year or being a graduate of one of the world's top 100 universities. When you see people interested, which is it because they're big income earners or because they're graduates from one of these top 100 universities? What does it tend to be?
Well, it's a bit of both, really. It sort of just depends on what station they're at in life. There's a category C, which is where you can essentially be a fresh graduate from a top 100 university, but there's a limited quota of 10,000 a year appended to that particular bracket. Otherwise, you need to have a university degree, bachelor degree from a top 100 university and have 3 years working experience in the last five. But ironically, they're only making bachelor degrees eligible. Advanced degrees are not. Apparently, from what I've come to understand, it seems that the competitive nature of getting into a bachelor degree program in a world top 100 university is a lot higher than if you've actually secured an advanced degree from one of these fine institutions, because apparently getting an advanced degree is more of a sort of pay your money and get in type of gig. which doesn't make any sense to me, because if we're going to attract talent and you get a PhD from a top 100 university, surely we want to have that talent and not penalise them because they happen to go to a university that didn't meet the mark, so to speak.
Okay, that's got us off to a good start. Inaki Amari, how are you?
Chair of the European Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you very well, thanks.
How are you seeing it?
Well, I think the part of the problem is that we don't need only top graduates that make a lot of money in Hong Kong. We need actually people across the board. Our organizations, they tell us that they need not just those top graduates, but they need people in all different sectors, across all the different segments of the organization. And we are struggling to actually get them here into Hong Kong. And we don't need just mainlanders. We don't need just people that only speak Chinese. Our organizations need diversity. And diversity is one of the key pillars of any international business hub, because it creates a lot of innovation, brings competitiveness, productivity. If we lose diversity, it's going to be a big challenge for Hong Kong.
What are the turnoffs, do you think, at the moment? Why are people reluctant to come?
I think the number one reason is that during the last 3-4 years, Hong Kong has been perceived as had a lot of negative connotations outside Hong Kong, and therefore it has lost a lot of importance and relevance globally. And for those new generations that we want to attract, we need to start from scratch. We need to actually start from introducing what is Hong Kong, explaining that it's one of the most amazing and beautiful places in the world and one of the most interesting places to start your career. So there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done in order to reintroduce Hong Kong to the world, especially to those new generations.
Right. So you're saying, you would say, it's not a problem right at the very top. Those schemes are working, but what are all the levels under that? Middle
Absolutely.
Management, and that's what your members are telling you in the European Chamber. Okay, well, we've got to feed that through.
If we look at the figures, I mean, it's almost like it would be some sort of political element. The number of arrivals is the lowest percentages are places like the UK, US and Australia. But when we look at some other European countries like France, arrivals are coming in, are picking up faster than in Canada as well than they were in from UK and US. And then you look at Asian countries like India, Japan and especially South Korea, arrivals picking up much faster there. So it's not a one size fits all, is it?
That's correct. And I think that has to do a lot of also with the way the media has been portraying Hong Kong in some of those markets.
Yeah. All right. Well, how about Mr. Lam Chung Sing, the lawmaker and Federation of Hong Kong in Kowloon Labour Unions? Mr. Lam, how are you seeing the situation?
Yeah, for today's issue, maybe we need some time. Because after 3-year pandemic situation, the recovery situation is stable, I think. But we need time. When I see some of the website in other countries, especially in Europe or US, they are still talking about the distancing measure in Hong Kong and also no dinner in the restaurant and need to wear masks. And you may need to have quarantine arrangement in the airport, or you may need a COVID test. Although the government promote Hong Kong to the world, but we need to strengthen and maybe we need some time to recover after 3-year pandemic situation, not a short period. And in fact, apart from the top talent pass, we have another scheme in immigration department is the general employment policy is organized by the immigration department. And the general employment policy focus on the professional from other country instead of mainland. And before the pandemic situation in 2019, more than 40,000 foreign professionals come to Hong Kong through the scheme. But in 2020, under the pandemic situation, only 13 to 14,000 foreign professionals came to Hong Kong. Now, we continue to recover. Maybe we need to wait until 2024 to see whether the number of foreign professionals in general employment policy in 2024 is more than 2019 or less than 2019, then right. we can have a full picture. So maybe we need some time.
What do you think our PR could do better overseas? If we've still got this very inaccurate picture of Hong Kong. Mm. I mean, I've had people tell me, oh, it's dangerous to visit Hong Kong. Literally, dangerous to visit Hong Kong. An academic from California telling me that because we're named on the State Department's list as places of dangerous to visit, they can't get insurance to send people here. What can we do about this?
Yeah, I think it's not the truth. But for example, in this year, some international survey, for example, the International Institute for Management Development issue a world competitiveness yearbook, and Hong Kong was ranked 7th globally. And Hong Kong continued to top the ranking in such as business legislation and also good in tax policy and international investment. But only the economic performance dropped because of the pandemic situation. And I think also the situation is different from different sector or the industry. We have the top talent pass. And in fact, not only the foreigner, even the mainland talent, you may see that the government approved so many mainland talent to came to Hong Kong through the top talent pass. But in fact, some of them are not working in Hong Kong. They just to apply the top talent pass, but they do not stay in Hong Kong or work in Hong Kong because the scheme aim to attract the talent, especially the technology talent. We're talking about the technology sector. Hong Kong want to be an international innovation and technology center. But the fact is that not so many top talent, even the mainland talent, stay in the sector in Hong Kong. The atmosphere of technology is not so strong in Hong Kong, but mainly financial center, and it's difficult for the transformation and realization or the commercialization of the research outcome in Hong Kong. So it's a problem, and it's not easy to attract technology talent to Hong Kong for the foreign country or the mainland. But I think we hope that we can implement more technology policy to attract the innovation and technology talent came to Hong Kong, mainland, and also the foreign country.
So we got that's
very interesting, Mr. Lam, what you're saying that about the mainland. Of course, many mainlanders approved for work visas under the top talent and the other schemes. I think more than 40,000 under the different schemes. But Mr. Lam, you're saying some of these mainlanders, they are approved, they get the visas, but they don't come to Hong Kong. Is that right?
Yeah. They are not working in Hong Kong, but just apply the top talent pass. They maybe have other consideration.
Why do they want the visa if they're not going to work in Hong Kong? Is it to qualify for residency, or what's the reason?
I think it's hard to say. There's only one factor, but there's so many factors. For example, different industry have different situations. For example, the technology talent, because Hong Kong's atmosphere in technology is not so strong, and we do not have so many technology policy right. to attract the foreigner. And the other thing, maybe the living and environment and the living quality, or because they can only live in a small place in Hong Kong and need to pay expensive costs. And I think it's also the reason.
If I can just interject here, gentlemen. Okay,
sure.
Stephen, beg your pardon. Yeah, so the first thing to appreciate is that under the top talent pass, if you're a mainland Chinese, you have to be an overseas Chinese, which means that you can't just come directly from the mainland and secure the status and move to Hong Kong. You've either got to be holding permanent residency in a third country, or you've got to have lived outside of China for a minimum of 12 months immediately prior to submitting the application for the status. So it's actually the overseas Chinese who are coming to Hong Kong under this program, not coming directly from the mainland. There is another program called the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme, which isn't moving really anywhere close to the speed that the top talent pass is moving at, where mainland Chinese can, subject to securing a minimum number of points and then being able to compete successfully against a whole bunch of other applicants, they can come directly from China to Hong Kong. So those Chinese that are coming, that are getting the status in a hurry under top talent pass, for the most part, what they're doing is, because it's easy to get, and there's, you know, it's a sort of a couple of months to finish the process, and then you effectively get 6 months to have the visa issued and then come and activate it. It's in sitting in their back pocket, you know, waiting to be activated in the event that some opportunity presents itself. So I think it's a kind of a mini insurance policy for a lot of those that don't take it up at this point.
These visas are not valid forever. You get one, you can't just keep it in your back pocket for 10 years, right?
No, correct. Yeah. So you've effectively got about 6 to 9 months after you've made the decision that you want to get one.
So it's quite a short shelf life there, isn't it? I mean, they could keep it in their back pocket, but yeah, just for a short period. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. If I can just then speak to the general employment policy.
Sure.
So the general employment policy is the general program which the Immigration Department has had in play for decades, which avails employment status for foreign national professionals. And one of the interesting things about this, you know, program is that the visa is typically used by foreign organizations that are sending talent to Hong Kong, generally, historically, for 2 or 3 year stints. Now, the utilization of the general employment policy by foreign companies is obviously a function of how well the economy is doing globally. So European companies are not doing that great these days, and therefore the number of European companies that are sending talent from Europe on an intercompany transfer basis to the Hong Kong operations is minimized as well. So in 2015, the Audit Commission reported on the performance of the Immigration Department in these particular areas, and they gave out some really interesting data. And one of the key takeaways was that, believe it or not, only 2% of all foreign nationals that come on day one actually stick around and decide to qualify for and then secure a permanent residency after 7 years. And that for all practical purposes, the foreign national pool of talent in Hong Kong under the general employment policy refreshes itself a third, a third, a third, basically every 2 years. And that's a function of the economy doing well overseas and then sending folks into Hong Kong to be able to take advantage of, you know, everything that Hong Kong's got to offer.
I think we've got to let Inaki come in at this point.
Yeah. No, thank you, thank you. I think you were asking at the very beginning what private organizations can do in order to change this. And I think together with the government, there are many things we can do. I mean, the first thing is that we need to make Hong Kong attractive again. So I think that more campaigns to make Hong Kong a touristic destination that brings people here to discover Hong Kong again is very, very important. Secondly, I think we need to understand that once we actually attract people to Hong Kong, we need to make sure that they understand that Chinese is not mandatory to get a job here. And today it looks like it's extremely difficult to find a job where Chinese is not required. And that basically comes down to all the organizations, all the employers in Hong Kong to realize that maybe we need to be pragmatic about the use of Chinese. We need to get English again as being one of the most important languages to help us to make Hong Kong an international business hub. There was a point made before about the fact that, I mean, when you are competing for talent with Silicon Valley and other very important destinations in the world, the people are basically comparing apples to apples, and they basically see here that, I mean, the living conditions are not exactly comparable to what they find in Dubai in terms of how big the housing is going to be, how easy it is to get a kindergarten. So all these things probably are more systemic, and Hong Kong really needs to work hard in fixing long term. And on overall, I think we need to reestablish the trust between Hong Kong and the rest of the world. And we need to do it by bringing people to Hong Kong, and then we need to also send people from Hong Kong to see the rest of the world. The European Chamber is organizing during this week and actually tonight, precisely a number of events to really bring people from Europe to see what is going on here so that they can go back to Europe and tell what they see here. And we need to do the same. We need to send people from Hong Kong to Europe to basically see that there is not only just war and crisis in Europe, but also is one of the main trade partners that we want to keep.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go back to Lam Chung Shing, a lawmaker from the Federation of Hong Kong and Kowloon Labour Unions, who was talking earlier on about the lack of people coming in for technology. And I was just looking at Mr. Lam, just looking at the statistics, there's a technology talent admission scheme, and they say only 78 applicants for that. So that seems to suggest, it confirms what you were saying earlier, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, of course, apart from this scheme, the technology talent can come to Hong Kong through other schemes. For example, the top talent pass, general employment policy. But I think it's difficult for the transformation and commercialization of the research outcome in Hong Kong. So it's difficult to attract the technology talent. But I think the government tried to improve the situation, and we also have a research and academic and industry one plus scheme, which allow can improve the situation, I think. But and on the other side, apart from the above scheme, in fact, there's a immigration arrangement for non-local graduate a scheme, which allow the mainland or the foreign country graduate in the university in Hong Kong can stay in Hong Kong after they graduate if they can get a job in Hong Kong. So I think we can strengthen this scheme to attract a talent and professional and graduate from different industry, include the technology industry, because Hong Kong have the potential to be an international education hub, and at least Asia education hub. Apart from the mainland student, the university in Hong Kong can attract the student from Southeast Asia or the student from Central Asia. And also the university can cooperate with the enterprise, because the enterprise can provide job opportunity to those non-local graduates. So we hope to it can attract more non-local graduate, work in Hong Kong and stay in Hong Kong and contribute Hong Kong.
I think we seem to have a fence that we need to jump over to demonstrate that we're serious about establishing technology and research and development. Because what you seem to be saying is that people have got lots of choices in this area, and they just don't see Hong Kong at the moment as a sort of having the environment, the supportive environment, with a variety of choices. What do we do to improve the atmosphere?
I think it's not only the English environment. It is not one of the issue, but the most important thing is that we need to maintain our international financial center status with international horizon. In fact, our economic performance is not so bad, but we are still recovering, and it's not too bad. But Hong Kong is also supported by China and also staying connected to the world, a gateway to China for the world, and we need to strengthen its status.
Right, but the government is including a Chinese language requirement in virtually everything now. In the government.
In fact, the mainland talent and professional. I do not agree that our English environment is going down, because many mainland talent and professional came to Hong Kong. They also know English. And also, They have working experience in other countries, in US Europe, I think.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lam. In the second half of the show, we're going to initially be continuing our discussion about the trends in terms of people coming to work in Hong Kong. Large numbers of mainlanders being approved under various schemes to come and work in Hong Kong, although we are hearing from some of our guests that not all of them actually end up working in Hong Kong. But however, that's contrast with far fewer foreign expatriates actually coming back to Hong Kong at the moment. Our guests, as we continue the discussion, we still have with us Inaki Amate, the chair of the European Chamber of Commerce, and Stephen Barnes, who's the co-founder of immigration consultancy Hong Kong Visa Centre and the author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook. Later on in the programme, we're going to be talking about an initiative by Hong Kong U to offer free dental care to the underprivileged. And Jamie Clark will be joining us towards the end of the programme to give us the latest update on the Asian Games. Exciting day yesterday and another exciting day looming. If you have any comments on any of these topics, do email us at backchat@rthk.hk, or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and leave a comment there. Before we go back to our guest, let me just bring in one comment coming in on our Facebook page. Martin says, Hong Kong now has a lack of perspective to requirements from foreign investors. What exactly is the point of investing in Hong Kong as against Shenzhen, Guangzhou or Shanghai? The Greater Bay Area does not often specify the investment categories or likely returns.
Right. Stephen, good morning again. I want to come back to you on something that just came up just before the news. There are mainlanders who are still in the mainland, and there are mainlanders who've already made a move outside the mainland. Can you tell us how these two different groups are responding and what they need to do if they want to come?
Well, I mean, if you're eligible for the top talent pass, which is really as simple as filling in the forms, bearing in mind, right, that if you have moved from China to study overseas, for example, which is a typical catalyst for them to exit China, generally they've gone to a really, really good university, and therefore they're kind of like eligible for consideration under the top talent pass to come to Hong Kong. And it might be that they're a bit fed up of working in Paris now, and they like to, you know, get a little bit closer back to China. It's going to take some time for them to organise the stuff on the ground in Hong Kong to be able to make the move back. So, as I said, it's a kind of an insurance policy more than anything else. And then in terms of if you're in the mainland and you want to come to Hong Kong, then you've got to go through the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme. Which is a very, very long process. It's always been a sort of a 10 to 15 month application process. When the enhancement measures in December 2022 were announced, the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme was supposed to be, the consideration timeframe was supposed to be significantly shortened, but at the same time, remove the quota that was in place temporarily just to sort of ensure that we weren't being capped out. But I think what's happened is that the removal of the quota has meant that Hong Kong has been completely inundated with applications under that program, and there's no concrete action moving on it. I submitted one in October last year, and I'm still waiting for the official receipt on it. So it's clear that
October last year.
Intentions,
that's 10 months.
October
right?
last year.
10 months, yeah, right? Yeah, or no, yeah. 11 months.
Yeah, you look online and it says in progress. So the Immigration Department have received the application, but we haven't received an official receipt yet. So it's clear the intentions are good, but whether or not. The mechanics behind the administration of the program that's delivering, I think, is another question.
Wow. Well,
one other point on that.
Yes.
One other point I'd like to make on that. Some interesting data just before the news that there's only 78 approvals under the technology admission, the technology talent admission scheme. Well, that program is half-baked, frankly speaking. I mean, it was obviously cobbled together by some bureaucrats in a smoke-filled room that was thinking, oh, yeah, well, we need to sort of, you know, come up with some specific immigration program that's going to, you know, attract talent into Hong Kong to achieve all these, you know, research commercialization objectives and the like. But the actual conditions for approval... there might be sort of 15 or 20 appended conditions to the approval, to get the approval, and then also to retain the approval, you know, once the initial approvals come in, Well, it's a lot easier to work and secure immigration status under the existing general employment policy or the admission scheme for mainland talents and professionals dodge around the shortcomings of that particular program. Okay. So it's hardly surprising. There's only 78 approved.
I think Inaki's bursting here. Come on.
No, they're bursting. But I think there is another perspective, which is, Hong Kong is a place where people like to eat and eat well. And so it's not just about top talent. It's also about people working, for example, in the hospitality industry. If you want to eat well, you probably want to have some of the best chefs around the world to come and work here in Hong Kong. And that means that you need to attract also foreign talent for that type of sector. And I'm using that as an example. You can imagine that we could talk about any other sector and it would be the same thing. You know, it is extremely hard to bring people from Hong Kong to work in the hospitality industry today. In fact, I mean, it might take 9 to 10 months just to basically try to go through the whole process. And if you have a really good chef in Spain that you want to attract and come to work in Hong Kong, it's not going to wait 10 months to basically have your visa ready for him to come over here.
So in a sense, the scheme...
So I think...
Amati. In a sense, the scheme has been a victim of its own success, hasn't it, Inaki Amati?
It's a combination of, yes, that trying to hit the news, but then eventually not really looking into the practical steps that would make the process to really work properly.
Stephen?
Okay. So there's two things going on here, right? The programs are designed to attract talent are basically pro forma approvals. There's no job offer required. So the idea is that you've got this particular talent as evidenced by these particular qualifications or this particular income history. And therefore, as a result of being in that bucket, you're going to be able to contribute to Hong Kong when you get here. That's the first thing. Now, obviously, in terms of chefs, they're never going to qualify under the Top Talent Pass scheme or in the Quality Migrant Admission scheme. So they fall on the general employment policy. The general employment policy requires a job offer from a well-established Hong Kong company. So it's the dynamic is different. Now, the question is, yes, if we've got a Spanish chef that's in Spain that wants to come to Hong Kong, is there a restaurant in Hong Kong that wants to hire a Spanish chef out of Spain in order to fill that role? Well, as we know in Hong Kong, generally people don't get hired sight unseen. So this chef's going to have to get on an aircraft, come out to Hong Kong, do the dog and pony show, seek to get himself a job offer. As long as he qualifies under the general employment policy for the chef visa, he will get the visa. Now, your point's well taken. Under the general employment policy, sometimes the immigration department really holds the applicant's feet to the fire as to whether or not, a local person can be expected to do the job, which is an integral part of the approvability criteria under the general employment policy.
Okay.
But I'm finding, in fairness to the department, I'm finding that there's some flexibility that they're demonstrating at the moment in sort of cases that could fall either way, marginal cases. My sense is that they're leaning to approve rather than refuse.
Okay.
But it's obviously case specific in every single instance.
Okay, we'll have to draw it to a close there, but say thank you very much to Stephen Barnes. Stephen Barnes is the co-founder of Immigration Consultancy Hong Kong Visa Centre and the author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook. And also to continue to join us in the second half of the show was Inaki Amati, who is the chair of the European Chamber of Commerce. So stay with us.